I mean, I'm speaking Musqueam people.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. My name's Kelly Rayburn. Michael Rubin will be here in just a few moments. But right now we're going to play you a little bit of a little segment here on TED Talks on depression. And Andrew Solomon, who talks about the depression, talks about the depression is not happiness, but virally, and it is virtuality that seemed to seep away from people at that moment. In talk, equal parts, equivalent, and devastating. So writer Talk Solomon takes you to the darkest corners of the mind, And as he battled the depression. So we're going to do the TED Talks right now here on the Community Living Show. Enjoy.
I felt a funeral in my brain, and mourners to and fro kept treading till I felt that sense was breaking through. And when they all were seated, a service like a drum kept beating, till I felt my mind was going numb. And then I heard them lift a box and creak across my soul with those same boots of lead again. Then space began to toll, as if the heavens were a bell and being were an ear, and I and silence some strange race wrecked solitary here. Just then, a plank in reason broke, and I fell down and down and hit a world at every plunge and finished knowing then. We know depression through metaphors. Emily Dickinson was able to convey it in language, Goya in an image. Half the purpose of art is to describe such iconic states. As for me, I had always thought myself tough, one of the people who could survive if I'd been sent to a concentration camp. In 1991, I had a series of losses. My mother died, a relationship I'd been in ended, I moved back to the United States from some years abroad, and I got through all of those experiences intact. But in 1994, 3 years later, I found myself losing interest in almost everything. I didn't want to do any of the things I had previously wanted to do, and I didn't know why. The opposite of depression is not happiness, but vitality. And it was vitality that seemed to seep away from me in that moment. Everything there was to do seemed like too much work. I would come home, and I would see the red light flashing on my answering machine. And instead of being thrilled to hear from my friends, I would think, what a lot of people that is to have to call back. Or I would decide I should have lunch, and then I would think, but I'd have to get the food out and put it on a plate and cut it up and chew it and swallow it. And it felt to me like the Stations of the Cross. And one of the things that often gets lost in discussions of depression is that you know it's ridiculous. You know it's ridiculous while you're experiencing it. You know that most people manage to listen to their messages and eat lunch and organize themselves to take a shower and go out the front door, and that it's not a big deal. And yet, you are nonetheless in its grip, and you are unable to figure out any way around it. And so, I began to feel myself doing less, and thinking less, and feeling less. It was a kind of nullity, and then the anxiety set in. If you told me that I have to be depressed for the next month, I would say, as long as I know it'll be over in November, I can do it. But if you said to me, you have to have acute anxiety for the next month, I would rather slit my wrist than go through it. It was the feeling all the time, like that feeling you have if you're walking and you slip or trip and the ground is rushing up at you, but instead of lasting half a second the way that does, it lasted for 6 months. It's a sensation of being afraid all the time, but not even knowing what it is that you're afraid of. And it was at that point that I began to think that it was just too painful to be alive, and that the only reason not to kill oneself was so as not to hurt other people. And finally, one day, I woke up, and I thought perhaps I'd had a stroke, because I lay in bed completely frozen, looking at the telephone, thinking, something is wrong, and I should call for help. And I couldn't reach out my arm and pick up the phone and dial. And finally, after 4 full hours of my lying and staring at it, the phone rang, and somehow I managed to pick it up, and it was my father. And I said, I'm in serious trouble. We need to do something. The next day, I started with the medications and the therapy. And I also started reckoning with this terrible question. If I'm not the tough person who could have made it through a concentration camp, then who am I? And if I have to take medication, is that medication making me more fully myself? Or is it making me someone else? And how do I feel about it if it's making me someone else? I had 2 advantages as I went into the fight. The first is that I knew that, objectively speaking, I had a nice life, and that if I could only get well, there was something at the other end that was worth living for. And the other was that I had access to good treatment. But I nonetheless emerged and relapsed, and emerged and relapsed, and emerged and relapsed. And finally understood I would have to be on medication and in therapy forever. And I thought, but is it a chemical problem or a psychological problem? And does it need a chemical cure or a philosophical cure? And I couldn't figure out which it was. And then I understood that actually we aren't advanced enough in either area for it to explain things fully. The chemical cure and the psychological cure both have a role to play. And I also figured out that depression was something that was braided so deep into us that there was no separating it from our character and personality. I want to say that the treatments we have for depression are appalling. They're not very effective. They're extremely costly. They come with innumerable side effects. They're a disaster. But I am so grateful that I live now and not 50 years ago, when there would have been almost nothing to be done. I hope that 50 years hence, people will hear about my treatments and be appalled that anyone endured such primitive science. Depression is the flaw in love. If you were married to someone and thought, well, if my wife dies, I'll find another one, it wouldn't be love as we know it. There's no such thing as love without the anticipation of loss, and that specter of despair can be the engine of intimacy. There are 3 things people tend to confuse: depression, grief, and sadness. Grief is explicitly reactive. If you have a loss and you feel incredibly unhappy, and then 6 months later you're still deeply sad but you're functioning a little better, it's probably grief, and it will probably ultimately resolve itself in some measure. If you experience a catastrophic loss and you feel terrible, and 6 months later you can barely function at all, then it's probably a depression that was triggered by the catastrophic circumstances. The trajectory tells us a great deal. People think of depression as being just sadness. It's much, much too much sadness, much too much grief, at far too slight a cause. As I set out to understand depression and to interview people who had experienced it, I found that there were people who seemed on the surface to have what sounded like relatively mild depression, who were nonetheless utterly disabled by it. And there were other people who had what sounded, as they described it, like terribly severe depression, who nonetheless had good lives in the interstices between their depressive episodes. And I set out to find out what it is that causes some people to be more resilient than other people. What are the mechanisms that allow people to survive? And I went out and I interviewed person after person who was suffering with depression.
All right, we're going to leave it there. And that was the Andrew Solomon, who was speaking about the depression on TED Talks. Now, if you can go to the website, you can go to TED on Facebook, www.facebook.com/TED. You're tuned into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. My name's Kelly, and I've got Michael and Ben on the show. Good to see you, Ben.
Good to see you guys. How
I'm
are you guys this morning?
To see you coming in. So good to see you, Ben.
Good to see you.
And Michael, good to see you too.
Good morning, Michael.
How's it going?
It's going. How's it going with you?
Good, good.
And Michael, maybe you can let our listeners know what you have on our special guest today.
Our special guest today is Sergi Atwal, and he has cerebral palsy, and he started a company called International. I'm sorry, Sergi. What was that? International
Disability Consulting Group.
Yeah, and you have a seminar coming up to teach employers how to hire people with disabilities to fill positions. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that sounds like really important work. So, straight off the bat, why don't we get into the description of the seminar and what your company does, and then we can get into the backstory behind everything.
No problem. First of all, thank you for inviting me. It's an honor.
Mm-hmm.
What this seminar is going to be all about is we've teamed up with the University of the Fraser Valley. Mm-hmm. Which I was a student of. I graduated in 2013.
Right.
And then I went and did my master's. And then I came back and I talked to the president of the university, Mark Everett, who is a friend of mine. And I said, I'm starting this company. I'm doing this seminar. So he said, we would love to co-host it with you guys. So we're going to co-host it at the Student Union Building at the Abbotsford campus on the 18th. And we went to the Chamber of Commerce. Who I used to know, because prior to going back to graduate school, I used to work for the MLA here. So Dr. Daryl Plekis, and I was his community outreach coordinator, so I had connections with all these business people already through my job. So I just went back to them and I said, this is important. I have started this company. What do you guys think? You want to cooperate with me? So they've agreed to like co-host it with the university and the Chamber of Commerce. So what it's going to be all about is we're going to bring community services and other NGOs and nonprofits that deal with disability issues and help them find employment. We're going to bring them to the table, and we're going to bring the business community to the table, and we're going to bring all levels of government to that event on the 18th as well. And we're going to like start a dialogue and see if we can not improve the employment opportunities for disabled people.
Okay, so it sounds like really important work, because hey, people with disabilities need to be able to find employment and you know, feel that they're giving to the community as well as anybody else, right?
Absolutely, I'm not only doing this because I've studied this through my graduate work. I've lived it. So I, 10 years ago, I was in community services, trying to help get their help to get employment. So I know the struggles and the and what disabled people have to go through. So I said, if I have to make a career out of this, I'd rather help people as well.
So tell us a little bit about what you experienced, you know, coming up and everything, trying to find work, and how you wound up with an MLA. That's a very important job, even if it's as a volunteer.
No, I wasn't a volunteer. It was a paid job.
Yeah.
So I got fully paid. I got paid the salary. Every other assistant got paid.
Mm-hmm.
So it was what happened was I went to school, and well, prior to 2010, I was bouncing from one job to the other. I had passed my insurance exam, so I was an insurance broker, and I was working in one job for about eight years, not fully satisfied because I wasn't getting paid as well as I thought I should be. And so I just decided to go back to school because of a life-changing decision I made. And in 2010, I don't know why I decided to go back. I just said I need to go back to school and I need to get my BA and see what happens. And then I went back, and the first guy I ran into, well, the backstory to that is in 2008, I ran for municipal council here. And I almost won, but I almost lost. I lost by about 1,000 votes. So
well,
because of that, the Sikh community, which is a big part of the town of Everspoon, started saying to me that you should take a more active role in the community. And they came to me and they said, why don't you do a seminar on gang violence? Because gang violence in 2008 was a big deal, like it is still here in British Columbia. So I went back to the university, and I went and talked to its CRIM department, and I said, would you like to help me set one up? And there I met a professor by the name of Dr. Daryl Plekis. And ever since then, he helped me organize this seminar, and he played a pivotal role. And then after the seminar was done, he came to my insurance job and he said, why don't you go back to school? You're wasting your life basically bouncing from one career, one meaningless job to another, and not being paid the proper way. So why don't you go back to school, try to make a life for yourself? So I listened to him and I went back, and he mentored me ever since then. And we became very good friends, and I was doing my BA in political science. And when he decided to run in 2013, he came to me and said, would you like to be my political advisor? And I said, I would totally love that. And I'm a bit of a political junkie, so I said, well, no problem. And I took it on his youth and South Asian campaigns. And when he won, I was going to law school. I had been accepted to multiple law schools, and I decided to work for him instead. And I worked there for 2 years as his community outreach coordinator,
mm-hmm.
and made all these connections. And then I said, I've done what I wanted to do here. I need to now go back to school, get my graduate degree. I went back, got it in 17 months, and then I decided to open this business. So that was the whole short of what happened.
Well, I'm impressed that you got a master's degree in 17 months.
They also named an award after me at the university, at the University of the Fraser Valley, Sujit Awal Remarkable Achievement Award. So.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That is quite an impressive story and impressive resume with what you've done so far, and a master's degree in 17 months. That's about 7 months early,
BA
isn't
degree,
it?
My BA degree took 2.5 years.
Wow, that's pretty fast track.
Yeah.
And plus, did you...
three semesters of seven courses.
So right after when you're done your your course and everything, did you get a diploma right after when you're done, or?
No, I got a degree.
Oh.
Degree. Yeah.
Congratulations on there, on
I
your
got two
degree.
Degrees. I got a BA and I got a master's.
Mm. Wow. Right.
Congratulations.
Right. Congrats.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. So, so along the way, you told us about the seminar, and how did you manage to start the start your business?
Well, this is a funny story amongst itself. I went back to all my professors and at the University of the Fraser Valley, who I stayed in touch with for 2 or 3 years after I graduated, and I went back to them and I said, would you like to join me in this venture? And they all quit their jobs, literally, and started joining me. So I got three professors that were my philosophy and political science professors that now mm-hmm. work for the company. And we've worked, and then we went and we've hired a PR firm from Vancouver. Her name is Nora Weber. She did some work for the UN and stuff, and she liked what we did, and she joined the team. Now we got 7 employees.
Okay, Kelly, you're signaling.
No, I was just signaling that we're adding one more person, but
oh, okay.
It's not part of the group. So go on, continue
okay.
on.
Because sometimes he signals because we need to go to a break or something. So
got plenty of time.
Yeah. Okay.
You got lots of time. Don't worry.
Okay, so sorry. I'm sorry, Sarjeet.
No problem.
Yeah, so what is it that, what is it that you want to see get changed?
Well, what the overall, what my main goal is, I know, when I grew up watching, when people say that hockey players are heroes and they should be idolized and mm-hmm. I idolized people when I was growing up, but they were Rick Hansen and Terry Fox. You know, they did a lot for the cause of disability. So Terry Fox did a lot for cancer research. Rick Hansen mm-hmm. did a lot for spinal cord injury research. And what I now want, they took the cause so much forward. What I want to do now is kind of take the disability cause and mainstream the disability community, and say to them that you're entitled to everything that everyone else is entitled to. You're entitled to have a relationship. You're entitled to be employed in a good wage. You're entitled to live your life in dignity just like everyone else. So that's what I kind of want to accomplish to my career.
Yeah.
We got one more minute. So.
One more minute? Okay. Okay, so you want to see just as much equality for disabilities as anyone else.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. I don't think I would be alone when I say this. Canada has improved much and LGBTQ rights and minority rights and all kinds of rights,
mm-hmm.
but it's lagging behind, I would say substantially, when it comes to disability rights. And I just want to move that needle forward.
Yeah.
So, all right.
Go ahead, Kelly.
Thank you. We'll come back to you in a moment there, Sarjeet, and we're going to leave you with some. We're going to put you on hold for just a moment, so we'll take care of some announcements and stuff. But you're listening to the Community Living Show on the National Campus and Radio Association Networks. That's the NCRA Radio Networks. We'll be right back in just a moment. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-advocacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
most powerful motivational speeches that I have ever heard came from people who told me I couldn't do something. You know why? Because when they told me I couldn't do it, I was bound and determined to show them that I could.
Did you know CITR has an accessibility collective? Our new collective serves to explore issues of inclusion, equity, and accessibility for people with physical and cognitive disabilities on campus and beyond. If you love making radio, listening to radio, or want to get involved for the first time, come join our collective. We include people of all abilities, experience levels, and backgrounds in the production and programming of our show. Tune in to our weekly show, All Access Pass, from 5 to 6 p.m. on Thursdays for interviews, music, news, events, and awesome dialogues. If you want to get involved, email accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Hey, why so sad?
Oh, nothing really.
Not very convincing, Jane girl. Whatever it is, I've got just the cure for it.
One, two, three, four.
Did you know CITR has a women's collective? This brand new collective is all about providing and fostering a community for women who are or who want to be in radio, fighting the gender disparity in media, and centering women's voices and issues. If you are a female-identified person or ally who's already involved in radio or wants somewhere to start, this collective is for you. Email womenscollective@citr.ca for more information and to get involved. And tune in Friday at 6 p.m. for the collective show, Lady Radio, featuring music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about. See you then.
Well, how do you like it?
There's only one word for it. Terrific. You know.
Okay, you tune into the Community Living Show on the NCRA Radio Networks. That's the National Campus and Radio Community Association Networks. And, of course, our flagship stations, CFRO 100.5 FM and CITR 101.9 FM, both streaming online, cooperadio.org and CITR.ca. We are joined with Sergeant Arol, who is the CEO of International Disability Counseling Group. Am I right, Sergeant?
No, it's Sergeant. The International Disability Consulting Group.
Yeah, the consulting group. I thought I said that right, but I could be wrong. I'm sorry.
No problem.
All right, Michael.
So, Sarjeet, I guess at this point, why don't you describe what it was like, because you grew up with cerebral palsy.
Yes.
And I know that since you brought up the minority rights and things like that, right? I know growing up as a minority in this country that you were told certain things that you would never become this or that.
Yes, I was.
So go ahead and explain that to folks what that looked like for you.
All right. When I was born in the 1980s, I was told that when I was born, the first day I was born, I suffered a stroke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I was 2 ounces in weight. I was 3 months premature.
Okay.
I suffered a stroke, which led to my cerebral palsy, of course. But the doctors give my parents a report that I still have to this day that said, your boy will never walk, talk, or do anything productive in society. It's good to give him up for adoption or put him in one of those institutions in Tri-Aki.
Mm.
And they said, no, we're Sikh from the back. We're Sikhs. And my parents take the Sikh religion very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sikh religion says any human being is a gift from God, no matter what shape or size or whatever ability or not ability they come from with. So they just know that this is a gift from God and we will raise him like a regular kid. So they said no, and they decided they raised me, and they I spent I would say 5 days a week in Surrey, British Columbia, getting special physiotherapy for I would say 25 years. You know, mm-hmm. So if it wasn't for school, if it wasn't school, then I was there. So you mm-hmm. know, basically, I learned to walk when I was about 11. I learned to talk when I was about 8. I my first kindergarten teacher. I remember my parents telling me, told my parents that she's not my freaking nurse, so she's not gonna teach me. So my principal taught me in the principal's office for the first couple years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I led a very difficult life, actually. And, you know, if I look back now and say where I am, I had no hope in, if I may, no hope in hell to reach this when I was 13. You know, I would not have imagined that I would have got half of what I got now. Like, I'm weeks away from... I got into three PhD programs after my master's. So I'm now looking at starting a... I have a company. I'm weeks away from starting a PhD if I want to. And where I came from, it's unimaginable that I could have even got this far. So it was the special dedication of my parents and my siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And my aunts and uncles and everybody in my family and the community that surrounded me that supported me also. So I'm grateful for all the support. And if everyone had the support that I did, there would be no issues for disabilities. But I know I was an exceptional case. So that is why I'm kind of doing this to... give the support base that my parents gave me, kind of, to everybody else.
Well, it sounds like you regardless of what the establishment wanted you to know or experience, your family decided differently.
Yes. The
yeah.
establishment was not in the favor of Sujit getting an education. They were not in favor of getting a job and, you know, all those kind of things. But my family stood with me.
Well, that's amazing. That you know, because in most cases it's the family just caves in and just gives in to what the establishment says. It's like, well, I guess he'll never do that or he'll never do this. And
no,
that's amazing that your family stood with you. And
yes, they did. They actually did, and I got a sister that's a doctor, and she mm-hmm. actually got her 2 degrees from UBC, so she knows UBC very well. Mm-hmm. And she's a doctor, and she's a vascular neurologist, and she went into the medical field because she was inspired to learn about cerebral palsy and her brother beat the disease, kind of. And then I got another sister that just is about to complete her degree in psychology at UBC, so she's also studying this kind of aspect. So I inspired a few of my siblings, I think.
Yeah, it sounds like you're surrounded by inspiration and surrounded by a very talented group of people.
Thank you.
Yeah, so do you feel like you're honoring them by starting this company?
I think I am, really. It's all about, if I may, I got a great family network,
mm-hmm.
and I know that I was the lucky one. You know, to this day, whenever I need something, my family's there, and I know that there's not that many people with that many strong family networks that have disabilities. A, they don't know, they don't want to fight the system, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
B, they don't have the resources to fight the system or whatever. And I was a lucky one, so I'm kind of giving back. Like my professors used to say, and when I graduated UFE and I went back to thank each and every one of them individually, and I said, what can I do to thank you? Like, you guys have changed my life, literally. And they said, you just have to pay it forward. So this is my way of paying things forward.
What you're doing is actually a really good job, and plus you're starting like your own business, hiring 7 people, like employees, which is fantastic.
And out of the 7 employees, 3 of them are disabled. Like, they have some kind of disability. So what we have now decided to do, and we are going to try to stick to it, is to make sure that the first people that we go after to hire are going to be disabled people, either mm-hmm. through cognitive disabilities or physical. You know, we want to put them in meaningful and decision-making jobs. So that's a company policy.
That sounds like a great policy. Mm. You know, I wish that some of the companies I had worked with had policies like that. Mm. In place, you know, I think the world would look differently.
So, yeah, we kind of, if we're gonna go, like, if I'm gonna go, preach that to the business community, in my eyes, that hiring disabled people is a good thing,
mm-hmm.
then I need to lead by example. That's what I'm kind of saying. Look at what my company is doing, and look, we're not failing, we're succeeding, kind of, you know.
Yeah. It's clear that you are leading by example, just with your very own life. So,
thank you. I've never seen it like that. I just grew up as a regular kid. I was lucky that I've never been treated like a disabled person in my family. So I went outside for a few years and looked for jobs, and that was the first time I realized that there was some kind of inequity.
Hmm. Yeah. So, I guess the question is, what do you, if it was the perfect world, what would that look like for you?
The perfect world?
Yeah.
Well, it's simple. The word disability would not exist.
Mm-hmm.
We are all human beings. Mm-hmm. You know, I look at disability or whatever that word is, I don't even like to use it.
Yeah.
But I look at that situation as one of the characteristics of a human being. Like, you have a different hair color than I do. You have different eyes than colors than I do.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be another characteristic. You walk differently than I do, that's all. So it's just, I want a perfect world where that word disappears. Like, everyone has a job, everyone has a employment opportunity, everyone has relationships. Everyone is judged on one's merit, not one's ability or disability.
Wow. That does sound like the perfect world. I have to totally agree with all that.
I'll try to do my small little part.
Yeah.
On that note, we're going to have to take a break. Sanjit, we're going to put you on hold for just a moment while we have our announcements and stuff. And we'll get back to you in just a moment here. Is that okay?
Sure.
All right. So we've been speaking with Surjit Aral, CEO of International Consulting Group. We will be right back in a moment. You're tuned into the Community Living Show. My name's Kelly. I've got Michael. I've got Ben.
Hello, everybody.
And so we will be back in just a moment here on the NCRA Radio Networks. The Global Accessibility Awareness Day is on the third Thursday of May of every year. The community and campus stations across Canada are hosting inclusive radio about accessibility, self-efficacy, adapted technology, and more. Contact your local stations to find out more.
Do you like friends? Well, we like you. So become a member and get a Friends of CITR card. Not only does it make you special, but it gets you all kinds of deals with our friends on Commercial Drive, like 10% off at Stormcrow Tavern, High Life Records, Audio Pile, Mintage Clothing, and more. Visit CITR.ca for more, or come check us out in the Nest.
At Dunkin' Donuts, each and every
radio show
is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
Welcome to the Community Living Show. Welcome back. I'm Kelly. Michael's here. Ben's here. And we pretty much have the whole crew around.
Yeah. Yep.
So we're talking to Sergey Aral, who is the CEO of International Counseling Group. I hope I got that right. Are you there, Mike? Are you there, Sergey?
Yes, I am.
All right. So.
So.
Final thoughts.
Yeah, final thoughts. Let's wrap up with Sergey here. Sergey, you told us what a perfect world would look like with the word disability disappearing. Yeah. Why don't you give us tell everybody how to get a hold of you, so they need your help or anything in how to get to the seminar.
Sure, they can call my number. It's 778-823-3520. They can also email me if they want. I'll give you my email address.
Mm-hmm.
It is 1 minute.
No worries.
Take your time.
It's sajit.atwal.disabilitygroup@gmail.com, and they can either call me or email me, and we'll get back to them as soon as we can. And if they need to come to the seminar, just let us know, and if they need rides, we'll provide rides to get them there as well.
Your email address again is?
It's sajit.atwal.disabilitygroup@gmail.com.
Okay, great.
And my number is 778-823-3520.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you for joining us today, Sergey.
No problem.
All right. And good luck with the seminar. And I know your business is going to move mountains.
Thank you.
All right.
Have a great day.
You too.
Okay, bye-bye.
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 So that was Sergey Aral.
Sergey Atwal, yes.
Atwal, there you go.
So, Ben, you say you have some announcements for us.
Of course. But first, actually, I'd like to play the song for everybody first.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Maybe you can introduce
yourself. Yeah, I'll introduce you. This person. This person's name is David Saba. He is a local singer, songwriter. He's been doing like open mics. He's been playing gigs around town here in Vancouver. I just talked with him just last night, and I told him, I said, you know what, I'm going to be on the UBC web for the CITR
version
for the morning. And if you're listening, David, I just want to say good morning to you, and I hope you hope you're liking our show. And so this song that I want to do a biggest shout out to him, and this song is called
Out of Time.
Out of Time. So this is his first CD that just came out not too long ago. So I hope you guys like it.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I got it going on here. Here you go.
I played a few originals for you. It's... First one's called Out of Time.
So that was David Saba in the song called Out of Time, and that was the Pepe and Harrits. probably from the location that was on there, or probably the album. I don't know, but maybe Ben has.
I should know.
Yeah, you should.
The title actually of his CD is called "Out of Time," and that's the song that he performed it live at one of the open mics, I believe.
Right.
You can take a look at his YouTube channel. Just go to youtube.com/user/DavidSaba. Or you can Instagram him as well. Just go to @David_Saba. You can send messages to him. He can tell you where he's playing next and doing open mics as well.
Mm. Awesome. Sounds pretty talented.
Michael, you have something you want to talk about.
So,
and it's about just one more step, am I right?
Yeah, the calendars, we finally got them back from the printer. I was just showing you two some of the photographs.
It's amazing, Michael.
Very interesting.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
So, I'll put up on the put a sampling up on our Facebook mm-hmm. page again, and with contact information back to Cheryl Young, so if people want to order them, they can. And it's $20 for the calendar, and if you need to have it shipped, I think she's charging $5 for the shipping. So, so yeah, and it's all going to her fundraiser. She is trying to. Taking the next step in towards a care village for people with chronic pain, fibromyalgia, or chronic fatigue. And then her next step in this is she's building what she's calling a lodge. It's going to be a group home. And it's not like it's kind of going to be more like, I'm assuming, like condominiums or something like that. Everybody has their own suite, things like that. It isn't just going to be, but it's a group. She's describing it as a group home because everybody's going to be taking care of each other while there. We're all there as a community, looking out for each other. So yeah,
interesting.
It's almost like a like a big family kind of situation.
Yeah. But everybody have their individual suites at the same time, which is a very interesting dynamic. So.
That's really cool. I like to you know, get more information about that as well.
So yeah, so. If anybody does want more information, it is the Fibromyalgia Wellspring Foundation.org. And you can get the phone number and everything to contact Cheryl Young from there.
Hmm.
Yep.
Okay.
Cool.
So cool.
So we're just about out of time. Any upcoming shows? I know, Ben, you have an upcoming show.
It's actually to be announced. Sometime in October. So I'll keep you guys posted and I'll let you guys know.
All right. Michael?
That would be about it for me. Is the calendars are actually coming out. So
okay, cool.
For them to be around.
All right. To check us out, go to www.facebook.com/groups/CLivingRadio. Again, if you want to go to our discussions and stuff like that, I know Paul GT talked about BC Disability Caucus and what's happening with the disability situation with the PWD. So check that out as well. And yeah, so facebook.com/groups/ C Living Radio. We're also on Twitter and Instagram. I don't know if we're on Instagram, but we're on Twitter, CLivingRadio. And you can also email us, communitylivingradio@gmail.com.
Yep.
Ba-da-ba-da-boom.
It's all good.
Thank you very much. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having me here as well. Yeah. Good to be back.
It's like the trio here, like, so.
Disappeared for quite a while,
but now I'm back.
Yeah.
Nice. Good to have all you back, you guys. Ben. Good to have you back, Ben.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we'll leave you with the Black Keys, The Mind is Rambling. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you again next week. And, of course, tune in to, of course, Co-op Radio, our rebroadcast on it tomorrow. So have a great day. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. to do.